Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert, never cries when I don't say his name, Young.
Nope, never do. I just never cry. That's me. Hashtag never cries.
Yes.
I'm so
crying a little bit too sensitive, Brushwood.
I'm sorry. I was just crying because I was second this week. Normally, the last few weeks, I thought it was established I'd be first.
Do you know that I try to keep track of when I go from weird things to after things to alternate?
I did notice that, actually. You're always balancing the scales.
As if like one of you is going to be like, hey, I noticed you kept saying, you know, Brian's name first, and
I can't wait for that passive-aggressive email among three friends of 20 years, you know, like, hey, man, I know we've been friends since 1999, but I think it's about time we were on the same page as far as what order you mentioned us in.
Like a good parent.
Those emails always are like, hey, man, like, are we going to fight when we see each other? Like, and then you get like, and you realize it's because of the order of the names, you know, it's always like this bizarre apocalyptic scenario that you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Oh, names. Oh, okay. Got you.
Gentlemen, speaking of names, time to talk about the thing that has no name. Its name we dare not speak.
Oh,
because we cannot say its name. It is the unnamed.
Yahweh?
And when I say unnamed, I mean a mystery.
Go on.
A mystery monster.
Go on.
A mummified remains of a mystery monster found in Yakutia, which is a part of Russia, like most Russia, we've never heard of nor man has ever seen. And in the Siberian Times, and I'm sure Bryce will have this up in a moment for you to take a look at it. I don't even bother sending him links because he's like really good at just finding this stuff.
By the way, I have been watching him type in mummified Yakuta, and it definitely auto-corrected it to, you mean mummified yacht?
Yeah.
Which makes me want to know what a mummified yacht is.
Yakutia. There are better photos of this thing. Try to go to scroll down there. I think there's
all right.
This
so what
really
I'm looking at right now looks like mummified remains of a puppy. It's got puppy legs, but it looks like it's got like a duck bill, like a platypus.
That's not the best photo of it. And they've already called it a puppy, but it was like there's a real like one of the first photos they had was they pulled this thing out, and it looked almost chupacabra like, you know.
Oh,
and it was just, I mean, you looked at it, you're like, yeah, this is clearly canine, but like, you know, other.
Oh.
Reporter, okay. Like, you know, one of the other blogs, like, maybe is it a bird? Like, no, this is a canine teeth and all that. But that you see, there's a photo of this guy holding this thing up, and it looks like
looks like a deflated balloon.
It's like
somebody hired a clown for their birthday, and then handed them a puppy.
There's a better image. There's a better, freakier image there. Pull up all the images, and I'll show you. There's a guy with a red hard hat on holding this thing up, and it looks like a Skeksis, whatever, from Dark Crystal.
Skeksis, yes.
Like they're like a headline on the article that you're reading. Maybe that's usually a great way to find it.
Mummified remains of mystery monster found.
Oh my God! It does.
Yeah,
it does look like a Skeksis.
That was your first image of it.
Oh my God!
Trial by stone.
Wow. So it is. It's kind of tiny. I guess the other thing that really is impressive about it is that it does look like it's sitting down and judging you.
Well, yeah, but also smugly, even though it's emaciated and clearly about to die from starvation and has hollow cavities where its eyes should be, it still clearly thinks it's better than us.
It's like, all right, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out in judgment of all y'all.
He's like, I see you having your Weird Things podcast. We Skeksis don't have need for such things.
Naming things in the wrong order.
Trial by up yours.
Dark Crystal 2 took a very weird turn.
Trial by cut down contest.
So the
beat.
Apparently, according to the Killjoy article Bryce found, is that it's looks they look like pups or something of perhaps, I don't know if we positively identified it. I mean, can we really say what anything is for sure, even if we had DNA evidence?
I mean, look, first of all, I don't judge whether it was a puppy, an alligator, or a Skeksis. They're all equal in my nightmares. all bring me equal amounts of terror.
Imagine when Brett the Amtrek Aroundsville is the one out there holding up the tape measure there in that picture.
It does look like Brett. That's amazing. That's a great photo.
What I always find interesting about that kind of stuff is, like, you know, obviously they're out there. Were they out there on an expedition, or did they just, you know, they were out
like
there
a mine,
for
a fun, like some sort of, you know, mining thing, digging out there, just so digging stuff up.
Was this in, it said mummified, right? Which makes me think that it was intentionally wrapped for preservation.
No. I think what it just literally was the way it was preserved, because like in certain conditions, if you, you know, the soil conditions or whatever you're trapped in allow your skin. If your mummy's kind of like, if your skin's still sort of there, we kind of call it mummified.
Right. Desiccated skin.
Mm, like beef jerky.
Now, and I guess the puppy means it died at a young age. This dog died judging us.
This is going to be one of those things where we find out that puppies are their own species, like we figured out with ponies.
Oh, my God. I
still don't believe it.
Yeah, for those new listeners to the show, just so you understand who you're dealing with, there may be moments where we sound well-rounded and educated and informed. You're looking at perhaps the only collection of three grown-ups on the planet that had to be told that ponies were not just baby horses, that they're actually their own breed.
It's fine. Fine.
It would be. Can we agree? It'd be a better world if puppies were their own species.
I know, they could be. They could be. You know,
for as long as they lived.
Yeah, puppies are to dogs what ponies are to horses, right?
Yeah. You just go to puppy.
And the amazing thing about that is for us is that one, I had to be the one to say, "Hey, yeah, here's the funny thing." And all that evidence around me throughout my entire life, like including, I don't know, my best friend in high school who actually had ponies that he did like pony photography with and put your kid on it and probably explained this to me. And I'm just still thinking like, so it's going to get bigger, right?
Yeah, no. Ren Igu in the chat room says, but imagine how cute if puppies were a separate breed, how cute puppies would be.
Dude, they would be like those, I don't know, those Beanie Baby stuffies, the ones that are just nothing but eyes and a tiny mouth. Yep.
Oh, my God, yeah, the ones that would start a riot at a McDonald's back in 99.
Yes, you know, exactly.
Be like the most adorable little things on Earth.
Yeah. Gentlemen, we're going to do a really quick update just to get exciting sort of news. Again, our hourly SpaceX update. Apparently, the Raptor engine, which is what they're going to be using to power the next generation rocket that SpaceX is developing to go to Mars, they've sent the first one out of the building and it's on its way to the test site in Texas where they're going to begin testing this new engine, which in the Raptor, what's interesting, I think they're going to, believe methane for that. And it's going to be, you know, basically as powerful as like one of the big main shuttle engines. And they're going to have like 9 of them on the rocket, apparently. So that's kind of cool news as things progress forward. And we've had there's a new announcement. We've got approval this week for a company to actually do their own first private company, just received permission to travel beyond Earth's orbit. Okay. All Moon right. Express just got permission from the U.S. government to say, hey, and we'd like to go beyond the Earth's orbit if that's okay with you. They're partnering with asteroid company Deep Space Industries. They want to start launching robotic spacecraft on near Earth objects and begin prospecting. This is today. I mean, this is where we are right now, guys.
Okay.
So this would be the collection of those Raptor engines on a rocket would be the most powerful rocket since Saturn V.
Ever.
Right.
Ever. For the Raptor, it would be the Mars transport, whatever they're gonna call, which, by the way, next month SpaceX is supposed to unveil their architecture for Mars, sending humans to Mars.
Wow. So, okay, two things. First of all, these Raptor engines, they only fire in space or they get to orbit and then keep firing?
No, they can fire on the ground. Fire on the ground. They start off on ground, so... Yeah.
Okay, so they will be used, like it's a rocket that's being used to propel itself out into space.
First stage.
And then that rocket becomes attached to a larger structure to push it, or...
Or push a... It'll be big... Remember, this is the rocket code named the BFR.
Yeah. Yeah. Big friendly rocket,
which next month, and let me give you the date on this. This is it's been in the, you know, amateur sort of, you know, people following space and following SpaceX and stuff. And by the way, I'm going to give you a shout out. Like has been the SpaceX on Reddit. The forum there is great. They've got great moderators on there. They have on the right side, they list all the upcoming conferences. So we had today, it was Gwynne Shotwell talked about the Raptor leaving the building. And you can see the 27th of September is when Elon Musk is going to be at the International Astronautical Congress, and he's going to announce the architecture for going to Mars.
Colonizing Mars.
You know, and they have May 2018 is the target date for launching the Red Dragon, which will be, you know, a SpaceX mission to Mars with the help of NASA and everybody else. So, but it's great to not listen. We love SpaceX. We love that. But we also love talking about Blue Origin, you know, and following. Sure, we may throw a little shade back and forth, but we're big cheerleaders. We love to talk about what's going on now with Moon Express and deep space and all of this. This is so awesome. And the more people we get to talk about doing cool stuff is just thrilling.
All are welcome. Anybody who's going to promise us a ticket off this festering petri dish is welcome in our eyes.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that you channel the Magic Munchkin from Poltergeist. All are welcome in the journey to Mars. Come, all you crazy entrepreneurs. Take us to Mars.
So I have one topic that I'm going to do after. I got a little small topic we'll talk about. And I got one topic I'm going to save for right after we do our little plugs and stuff, because it's going to lead right into Brian telling us about his experience at DEF CON. But really cool headline this week, Watson, IBM's Watson, which, you know, first it was doing chess and became, you know, top chess player there is, and then went to Jeopardy and humiliated us there. And
well, hold on. It was the same program? Deep Blue became Watson?
Mm-hmm. It was the idea of this sort of distributed sort of learning system of how to learn from and take information sets and build up on that. And so that was what they would choose these different goals instead of making... You know, I've been listening to a lot of really cool books about the histories of computers and single-purpose, you know, computational devices, and that's one of the things that can happen in computer science is that you can develop an artificial intelligence system that's very good at a single use, but then it's hard to apply that to other things. And so what IBM's been trying to do is find general-purpose intelligent systems and then giving them different information sets. So it started with the rules of chess, and then expanding to studying the chess games of great chess masters and to learn how to do better chess. And it's funny because I've had discussions with people who are relatively intelligent who thought that it worked, you know, it played chess just by doing sheer computational, you know, figure out, you know, all the different possibilities. But part of what makes chess a great game is the fact that you get three or four moves ahead and you run out of, you know, atoms in the universe to calculate.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Possibilities. I'm generalizing there. And Go even more so, and now we don't win at Go. So IBM took that system, and that was Deep Blue, and that became Watson, which then went to Jeopardy and was using that system to understand language and what people meant. Then the next step was they applied that to medical information, and they took thousands and thousands and thousands of diagnoses and research and poured that into Watson with the understanding that Watson would start to understand contextually what these things meant. And there's been a report from Japanese doctors that said that they were dealing with a woman who was having trouble at University of Tokyo, was having difficulty trying to diagnose a woman's condition, particularly what was wrong with her. And Watson said, I think it's this kind of leukemia, narrowed it down to a very, very specific kind of leukemia and what kind of treatment would be adequate, and responded positively to it. This is going to rapidly become, we're going to, in the very near future, we're going to go into doctor's offices and we're going to think that it's silly that we took so long to actually have the doctor not just look up, you know, do a word search in a database, but use really particular conditions to find out what was wrong. We'll think that it was silly and archaic that we've had we've had functional computer systems, as Alan Turing would describe them, for, you know, going on 70 plus years, yet it's not until almost the middle part of the first half of the 21st century that we really started using them in any significant way in diagnosis.
Well, I mean, part of that is a matter of data access, right? Like, a big part of what makes Watson so valuable is the fact that he has access to the entire internet's worth of data points.
That, I mean, that's what makes it great. A big part of it, though, has been medicine is traditionally very, very conservative and very, very reticent. And there has been a resistance from doctors going back even in the 70s and stuff with patient records and things like that to the idea that, no, there's something else that we need to add. A computer couldn't do this. And there's been this hesitation there. And it's been, I would say, you know, not, I understand that there's, you know, there's a potential danger there, but even doctors have this, there's been a hesitation even to use these tools to collaborate and, hey, let me get five other doctors to tell you what we think. It's that, no, I should know, I'm the area of expertise here, not even wanting to use the wisdom of the crowds.
Right.
Which, you know, and that's one of the problems. Like,
so with Watson specifically, when I was covering the Collision conference in New Orleans for Daily Tech News Show, they had a couple of people there that were, I mean, AI was a big topic just in general, but Watson specifically has made their play out into the enterprise to basically say, hey, look, if you can plug in any kind of big, large data set and Watson can do the sorting for you, that this is like a huge, huge, huge just general move for them in terms of getting this into, you know, our world on a wider level. But I totally agree. I think that we're going to be at a point in even like 10 years when the idea of, like, you know, part of the hesitation now when you go to the doctor is like, oh, well, let's make an appointment and I'm nervous about not getting to see my doctor, or it's, you know, there's a lot of anxiety in moving because now you have to have different doctors, this, that, and the other, and maybe you like them, maybe you don't. But the idea that we could get, you know, if even just a comprehensive, great first step from a AI system, I think is just revolutionary.
Well, and I would say I've had to deal with probably three conditions in my life that were like from a quivering chin syndrome. I have very, very delicate skin. So like I had like a period of time, like my eyebrow would get like patchy. It looked like I shaved it. And I never had the first doctor, even the second doctor I asked about it, correctly diagnose it. Never had that happen. I had to go to like three or four doctors to finally get somebody who knew what was going on. And it's frustrating because you'd say like, well, that means if you talk to three or four doctors, probably somebody there would know what was going on. But this weird sort of, you know, they will look at it, they will, within their capability, their ability to do a search or whatever to do it, they're going to limit it to that. And just that unwillingness to go out there and try to even get, you know, peer opinions or things like that, other than out, you know, within their own practice, but they start to think the same things. And great book, we've talked about this before, and I just quoted, was Wisdom of the Crowds, I think by Sawicki, which is just this great book talking about how you improve your information abilities, you know, by not the wisdom of the mob, but individual stuff, and how certain fields just don't want to do that. You know, they want to consider themselves the experts on that and the best gateways of that, to the point that it kills people and people die. Millions of people die every year on this planet because of this mindset.
Well, and that's one of the benefits of relying on or migrating towards robot doctors is there is an inherent humanity to doctors that cannot be purged. And along with that humanity comes concerns of reputation. A robot has zero concern for its reputation. All it knows is that it should report all of the data exactly as it experienced it, without guile, without any endgame, without any worry about what this means for its reputation, its win-loss record, or any of that stuff. That is something you simply cannot extract from the humanity, or you cannot excise that from the humanity of the doctors. They only go to so many conferences. So in other words, like, think about it. These, you know, once a year, maybe thrice a year, you know, you get the best heart doctors meeting together at these conferences. So three times a year, they bother to talk to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Robots don't have that problem, man. They talk to each other nonstop all the time. Here's what I'm up to. What are you up to? What does this seem to correlate to?
You know, and somebody pointed out in the chat room, it's like, yeah, you go there and a doctor often won't even start to try to guess. So like, oh, I'll send you to a specialist. And that specialist might be their golfing buddy. We don't know the criteria by which they decided this is the person to get information. We don't know that. The best results I've ever had of when I've gone to talk to doctors who are affiliated and teach at universities, because I know they are around, you know, on a daily basis, they're around dozens of different people from different disciplines. They're in a much different environment than people are off in their own practices and stuff. And that's generally been when I need to find out what's going on. I have to go to, like, you know, I need to go to the doctor that talks to the most doctors. And I've had, you know, just a really, a little side jack here. So I have this, you guys, I have like a chin quiver, right? So like it's hereditary. So every now and then my chin will start to quiver. Caffeine, anything, change in temperature can trigger it. My mother has it. My brother has it. And, you know, I got prescribed Parkinson's medication. I got like all these horrific sort of recommendations. Finally, I found my way to a Dr. Singer at the University of Miami, who had published a lot of stuff, was a really big expert on neurological conditions and things like that. Figured out exactly what it was, figured out exactly how to treat it. I get Botox in my chin, just so you know. It's just in my chin, guys. But I'm not saying I won't move it up to the rest of my face as I get older.
Old Hollywood Maine. There he is.
So I have a funny, just I'll do another quick weird story about that. But my mom was going to an eye doctor, was going to one of the best eye doctors in Florida. And her eye doctor said, noticed the chin quiver and said, oh, I can treat that, and gave her an injection. So my mom was with me visiting the doctor I was at, and my mom mentioned, my eye doctor actually, you know, figured out the diagnosis too. And the neurologist looks at her funny, like, your eye doctor? And he goes, well, what's his name? She says, oh, Dr. Flynn. And he goes, oh, Flynn. And world-renowned ophthalmologist whose reputation was so brilliant guy, world-renowned guy that even this neurologist knew who he was. So he goes, oh, well, that makes sense. Flynn would be the guy to know.
That's amazing.
And so funny thing, though. So I participated in a little research study on this to figure out the condition of it. Had my brother come in, my dad come in, we got wired up. They did blood draws and all that. And finally, the doctor came back and said a couple months later, said, hey, I found the name of the condition. I go, oh, what's it called? He goes, quivering chin syndrome. I'm like, well, that's the original. Turned out that my mom was adopted, but I know her biological family name. And the publisher, the doctor who did the study, had the same last name as my mom's biological.
Oh, wow.
Family. So sounds like a family, you know, hereditary condition. And the only other people who have it, you know, was like some family in England with the same name.
That's insane. The one thing I did want to add is that, like, you know, easily the best medical care that I've gotten as an adult was living here in Oakland, because Kaiser Permanente, which is a very unique structure where they kind of eliminate, they are both your health insurance and they run the hospitals and pay the doctors. So you don't have the cost problem of like doctors overcharging for the insurance. And that's where like healthcare tends to get really expensive. And because they're very technology forward, like there's an app where you can schedule stuff. You can send in, I had this weird bump on my leg that Ashley was bugging me to like get checked out. I could take a picture, send it in. They could forward it around within their own system because they were
Thank
all
God
under one
married.
Umbrella. And they have one medical center where now if you got to get referred, you're just going down the hall as opposed to going to a whole nother office. But I'm very lucky to have that where I am and have it be so close to me. What we're really talking about in terms of shared information and the speed of diagnosis, the speed of you know, sharing and having that be easy to do. I mean, that's really what we're discussing when you look at automation and AI.
So one of the factors that I think is fascinating about this is, let's say for sake of discussion that Watson MD, the simulation of a doctor, is half as competent as any doctor, right? The flip side of this is that, yes, he's half as competent as an average doctor for sake of discussion, but he has unlimited availability because he's free, essentially, right? Once the program is written, and of course, they will have to recoup their investment and so on. But let's say for sake of discussion, once you have the program, you're able to run them off of your smartphone or whatever. And also, he has unlimited time. So it seems to me that a half-smart doctor with unlimited time and access and unlimited questions would offer at some point a superior diagnosis to one of the best doctors who can only see you for this half hour at this time at this one instance.
Yeah, as long as you're not, and this is going to sort of example, as long as we're not sending in people with headaches to get brain surgery, you know, half the time. But yeah, I think that the problem is just gets into that we have a wonderful thing in genetic testing. Genetic testing is amazing. The ability to do diagnosis and all that's incredible. And, you know, a lot of my friends, all of my family, you know, I've had people, we've known tons of people who've had DNA testing back when you could actually get like medical results. You know how many people I know who freaked out and panicked when they did it on their own? 0.0.
Really?
But I didn't know anybody who freaked out. Everybody was like, oh, okay, I'll go talk. If they found something, like, I'll go talk to a doctor. But that was the worst case scenario is you'd see this thing like, oh, I have a higher incidence maybe for cancer. I guess I should talk to a doctor. Yet the FDA went in and told 23andMe like, no, you can't show people if there's a correlation between this and disease, even though there's a correlation between this and disease and not necessarily, you know, correlation is not causation. And that was sort of, our information was limited. We had this weird freedom of speech thing come in there where they couldn't tell us these things because FDA is like, no, that's diagnosing. No, that's giving you a statistical probability based upon available evidence. That is the opposite of diagnosing from, you know, a pseudoscience point of view.
Yeah, that's one of those, pendulum swings both ways because like that same frustrating slowness to move is driving us nuts on the 23andMe issue with the FDA. However, that's also why America was largely spared the horrors of thalidomide because we had a 7-year process to verify the drug. And,
yep.
You know, while Europe had jumped on board with it. And
yeah,
it
but
turned
this
out
is
to be
not
the
a drug. This is information. This was telling people you had to be protected. And also, thalidomide is poorly misunderstood. Thalidomide was, you know, it was a synthetic which had it flipped and it was a problem to pregnant mothers and stuff. And that was one of these things that then there was a overreaction to a drug than the right situation.
Sure, sure, sure. I am not concerned with the specifics of either example. My point still stands is that we have a very slow to move dynamic because of the FDA. The FDA wants to take their times making any changes. And that has, on the one hand, for example, you know, like of all examples, John Stossel talked about how, you know, this company, the FDA, congratulated themselves for fast tracking a cancer drug that was so effective. They said, normally we wait 7 years. We're only going to wait 4. We're saving thousands of lives by moving this up 3 years. And then, of course, John Stossel's take was like, yeah, what about the thousands of people who died because they had to wait 4 years, right?
Yeah, I'm all for. Like, I absolutely think there's a value in like, hey, before we give you a treatment, let's make sure this stuff works. I'm all for it. But this was the idea of we're going to restrict information. The idea that we're going to say, yeah, no, we can get gene testing, but we're not going to tell you. We're going to make it illegal for the people who tell you to give you this data set to tell you this. To me, that's restrictive, even though the workaround is you take it. Then you go to that data set and you say, here's my DNA. And so that was because the argument was, well, people are going to react. We're afraid of how people will handle this. And like, what? They're going to go talk to their doctor. What is the, you know, what is the negative outcome? And it's like, well, people may have, there was no evidence there was stress. There was no evidence that people were panicking. There was no evidence of all that. It came back to, no, we want to control this.
Right.
That's dumb. Let people know it. I don't know why. It's so stupid.
You know what? Here, allow me to offer a silent prayer. A pox upon them, all of them. May 99 and 100 of them be struck down. Wait, nay, 999 of them be struck down. And let only Justin and me and a handful of others survive. So shall it be.
Wow, that's really, it's harsh.
I'll tell you what, that's a little extreme, but you want to know what's really reasonable? Donating to patreon.com/weirdthings. Well, folks, if you like this show, you can go on over there right now and make sure that you show your support for us keeping this going. Again, busy month, folks. Lot of stuff going on. And there's a reason why we are doing this show here on a Tuesday, better late than never, because we care about you guys. And we know based on your donations to becoming our patrons that you guys care about the show. So go ahead and show your support at patreon.com/weirdthings.
Unless you don't care.
Yeah, no, but seriously, can we go to the world where 999 out of 1,000 people have died of some mysterious disease and only
we're
Justin
gonna get one more touch. You see John Oliver's thing on 911 911 call centers?
No.
There was another thing where they talked about how because they have difficulty doing location specific data. And he threw out this stat, like, they, you know, one number says that if they had better technology to do location specific data, that we would save 10,000 lives a year.
Yeah. Did he use a big overdrawn metaphor after he said the numbers?
Oh, of course. Yeah, you have to make it through. There's 2 minutes of really good information there.
That's like having a McDonald's that says there's other McDonald's.
Oh, it was even weirder than that. But the point is, what was interesting is like, wow, that's great.
I really enjoy John Oliver, but his joke writing is about as formulaic as Family Guy. Like,
yeah. It was what was interesting about the number was he threw that out there. I'm like, man, that's like even greater than the number of people who died from homicide from guns. Like, no, we're gonna have technology arguments. Maybe we should have like Facebook wars about that too. You know, just saying. Speaking of guns, you know when you would need guns?
When?
A post-apocalyptic situation.
My prayers have been answered. 999 of 1,000 people have been killed, and only Justin and I survive as far as we know.
Yeah. I love that I couldn't say situation and civilization at the same time, but I love the idea that if I'm surviving, I get to decide what's a word or not.
All right. So when last we left, we found a lady with something bundled in her arms.
Yeah, for our two new listeners, you see what happened is there's a plague wiped out most of humanity. Brian was left, thought he was alone, left a podcast by himself just to some dogs. And then he got a knock on his door and it was Justin and they decided to embark upon a road trip, unanimously deciding they would use a battle van with bicycles in back to go through small towns. And they're on the road and there you go, Brian, pick it up.
Yeah, man. So look, last we were there, there was this lady wearing a bunch of robes around her, had some kind of bundle in her hands. We were trying to figure out what's what. And I told her, hey, lady, sorry. I know this is weird, but we don't know what you got in your hands. What you got in your hands? Show us what you got in your hands. Also, there's guns on you.
Yes. And she turned around. She says, it's just my baby, just my harmless little baby, my adorable little baby.
And let's see it. Show it, lady.
Hit the gas. Hit the gas.
No.
We're out.
No.
And it's a baby.
A living human baby?
It's a human baby.
Oh. Oh. Is it is it crying?
There are things around its eyes.
No. Very well behaved.
Is it making any noise?
Escaping gases.
The gas. Hit the gas. Sorry,
all right. Look, at this point, I'm like, I jump in the car. I'm like, look, crazy is catching, and there's too much disease in this world. I'm bye.
Don't worry. There's another one right behind us. Just wait for them.
All right. So your decision is to drive off like that?
We definitely just abandoned 50% of the – or 33% of the known human race.
And maybe the last chick on the planet too, just so you know.
Look, man, there's some
– Where are we again? Where on our journey are we? If Bryce
you haven't left Texas yet.
Yeah, we're still west – I mean, first of all, that's not saying a lot. Haven't left Texas is the equivalent of we're still on North America.
Sure that. It is like half the United States. So you're
we're west of Austin.
Yeah, you're west of Austin. Thank God you're west of Austin. Don't! So that's what you're doing? It's a woman, it's a young woman, side of the road. Cradling.
I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, look, we can't – if we're going to start saving people on our quest out to go find out if Ashley's still alive – and by the way, it's just now hitting me that I'm a widower. And my children are all dead. Why are we doing this again?
This is like part six of this series.
Yeah, it just dawned on Brian in part six that his entire family is gone. He has been far
Brian's
more
grief
about what our podcasts are going to be. The horrors of what has befallen his family.
So we're on the road. We're heading 80 miles an hour out west. Justin's driving. And I'm like, hey, Justin.
Wow, roll down the window.
Listen, man. Seeing that girl with that daughter made me remember I had a girl and a daughter once.
Hey, cool story, bro. Do you think there's still an Arby's? Can we find an Arby's just for the sauce?
I mean, we could get Arby's sauce, and I'm with you on that. But like, man, I feel like I've lost a lot all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know, so, man. Cool story. So let me,
you guys unanimously, you floored the gas and you left.
Yes. All right, so wait, do we go back for the lady?
No,
we're gone.
No. I mean, look, we now know that humans exist. I mean, wait, what do we get? Fine. Stop the car. Turn around. Go back.
Hold on. We stop the car. Stop the battle van. We might not pick up the lady. Do we rob the lady?
I mean, we should at least find out some stuff, right?
All right. So wait, we're just going to have some very, very aggressive questioning.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go back. All right. First of all, by the way, I got these costumes.
Who's bad cop?
Well, I mean, first of all, I got these costumes that dress us up like cops. It was from a sexy cop store. And so,
I write the novel of this, assuming that I survive in this universe, I'm going to have to write it where Brian's driving in the rearview mirror and he sees the tiny figure getting smaller and smaller, and then he hears the echo of his children's cry, and he remembers his humanity comes back to him for a fleeting moment.
Yes, correct. And I slam on the brakes, and I'm like, look, we got to go back. Look,
that's not what happened, but that's the way I'm going to write it.
Yeah. All right. Fine. So we go back. Brian, you be good cop, I'll be bad cop. We're going to interrogate this lady, okay?
All right. Well, thankfully, I have these cop costumes. Let's just put them both on.
We're also going to be you're going to be good hot cop, and I'm going to be bad hot
cop. Right. Okay. Also, they're both sexy cop uniforms. So if you ever need to, if the situation arises, just grab these tabs here and you rip and the Velcro. And then you're pantsless, okay? Just FYI.
Yeah, it's great. So you're back. You see the lady.
Yeah.
She's cradling this infant that's not a good color, and there are flies around it.
All right. So, Brian, you start. You're a good cop.
I come out. I put on my mirrored sunglasses, pull out my nightstick, which I've, for some reason, inexplicably decorated with a bunch of Hello Kitty stickers.
All right, so you're just doing Spiro and the Fudge? Is that what we're doing?
Don't take this away from me. The world's finally ended and I can live this. Come on.
All right, whatever.
I'm like, hello, ma'am. I suppose you're wondering why I pulled you over.
Hey, she just looks around.
She remembers you. She's got to remember.
She's standing there, no car, like, you know, confused. Like,
well, listen, my partner wants to have you arrested for murder, but not me. I think you're pretty great.
And I lean over. Hey, you skeezy piece of trash. Why don't you throw that piece of human waste away and answer these questions?
Whoa. Justin, listen. We got to take a slow hand with this one. She needs an easy touch.
Yeah, she's lucky she didn't feel my hand up at the side of her face. I answer these questions, you piece of, you transient piece of trash. We got questions. We need them answered.
All right.
Gives
listen,
you both
all right.
A very
hey,
skeptical
man.
Look, starts to turn around.
One more of those and you're off the force, Justin.
All right.
Why don't you take a moment to cool off?
All right, I'm going to go take a walk around our van.
All right. Listen, I'm sorry. This guy, what can you do? Listen. I'm Officer Brian Awesome. What's your name?
Samantha.
Samantha? Listen, what you got in your arms there, girl?
His name's Little Brian.
Awkward. Listen, what say we give Little Brian a proper burial and all of
but
us...
But he's alive!
No. He's really not. He's dead. He's dead. Samantha, look at me. Eyes on me. Stop with the crazy eyes. Eyes on me.
Crazy.
Look. Little Brian's dead. He is no more. can we just accept that? And then we could all be cool. You can take a bath in our porta shower in the battle van, and we can
head
out west.
We're going to fast forward a lot of crying, a lot of screaming, a lot of denial, but you guys eventually take the baby from her and bear it, and the woman sobs, but she's compliant. She goes with you.
Yeah. So,
all right. So I'm still bad cop, though, as I throw the final a shovel
so
of dirt.
You transition from bad cop to bad roommates.
I throw the final piece of dirt on the tiny crib, and I'm like, happy now?
Do you guys remember, you're going to have to go through the whole thing. You're going to do a burial. You're going to put a grave marker, and you're like checking your watch because the sun's coming down.
Sure. Yeah, no. I mean, luckily, I guess we could push. I mean, it's not like schedules matter anymore. So listen, let's just get a few miles behind us, and let's get on the road.
Wait, whoa, Brian Awesome, Officer Brian Awesome, why don't you come over here for a second? Wait, we're putting this lady in our car. I thought we were just talking to her.
Well, I mean, what can she do? She's obviously emaciated. She's got
be a carrier for whatever this disease is. Obviously, her child died. Where do you think she got it? Let's at least ask her these questions.
Okay, first of all, she doesn't need an interrogation. We just buried her son.
This is our point. We weren't going to be good barrier, bad barrier. We're good cop, bad cop because we're going to interrogate her.
All right, hold on. All right, fine. It's just weird that we just buried her children and then we're going to accuse her of something.
Look, what were we talking about while we were burying? Like, shouldn't that have been the time where we were asking her questions?
I don't know. Time passes weird when we're telling stories. Listen, let's just get back. All right, you want to talk to her? Let's go talk to her.
She walks over to the gravesite, grabs the shovel, starts to...
All right, come on, Samantha, come here, baby, come here. Listen, we're going to hop in the car, we're going to get a few miles between us, we're going to set up camp. Let's go.
Also, right. I'm still being mean to her. I'm still.
I believe it. Okay. So there's a campfire, we're all hanging out, I still have mirrored sunglasses on.
All right. Is somebody trying to get... All right, I'm... I guess any port in a storm, Brian. Jeez, like, you know, you're...
All right, look. All right, you can play bad cop. Don't play bad partner, all right? We got a lot of miles between us and Andrew Main, all right?
All right. Hey, Samantha, so what's your deal, you crazy old coot?
Okay, all right. Yeah, no, actually, you know what? Justin's right. What's up, crazy old coot? What's going on?
Yeah, she's not really in a talking mood, so you just kind of got a stoic passenger for a while. Just accept that, okay?
All right, but she's not, like, hostile, right? She's not making moves when we're not looking?
She's grieving. She's grieving because normal people, when they lose a child or family member, go through the same grief.
Real quick. I'm going to hold out some food to her. I'm like, you want some spam? We got a lot of spam.
Yeah, she eats. She communicates. Okay, you guys have your camp up, but you're not getting anywhere with her. You probably could. She's not going to resist, Brian.
But I pull down my mirrored sunglasses, and I wiggle my eyebrows over it suggestively.
Mm-hmm.
Does that do anything?
Number one, I get that there's a biological imperative here, Brian, but like, can we please not try to bang the grieving passenger?
I'm not trying to bang her. I'm trying to turn her against you. I'm trying to use your leverage. I need somebody on my side, all right? And I don't feel like you're on my side right now.
I'm on your side. I'm looking out for us. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not the one who wants to take on the disease-ridden, grieving mother who was believed that her dead child was alive. Oh, man. That's so mean. I'm trying to keep us alive here, Brian. I came all the way back for you, and now we're on the way to salvation, and I'm trying to keep...
Whoa, wait. Did you just say the word salvation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, because I'm going to skip ahead to you guys back on the road, not to end this banter.
Sure.
As entertaining as it is. You guys are back on the road, because you're like, all right, enough of the argument. Everybody, good night. You know,
yeah.
You're driving. Sun's up. You're driving. Going along the highway, and you see a sign that says, Salvation, 20 miles.
Is that the
handwritten sign. Like, this is new. This is like... paint and plywood, and says Salvation 20 miles.
Hey, Justin, yeah. I don't know about you, but I've seen enough post-apocalyptic movies to know that anything called with a hopeful name is probably literally worse than hell. So what say we double-check all our gun barrels and get ready to shoot?
I don't know, man. Wait, you think that this is going to be worse than picking up old Fleabag in the back?
All right, first of all...
I heard that.
Yeah, Samantha, please.
I said it loud enough. You little germ petri dish weirdo.
Hold on, come over here. Samantha, all right, put arm around
Samantha.
I'm a
method actor. I'm committing to the role.
And what's funny is she's in the rearview, Justin's saying this in the rearview mirror, and she goes to shift her shirt or her shirts, and he sees the jury logo.
Tattooed on her breast?
Or no, on a t-shirt, you know, because it, you know, like, wait, I think
you,
Dragon Con, you were one of our fans. Everyone's like, oops. Oh, yeah, there was some strange immunity maybe got conferred there. So you're driving along, you see a sign, Salvation, 20 miles.
Okay, real quick, I slam on the brakes. All right, bro, what are we doing? Are we doing the full frontal assault? We just driving in like everything's hunky-dory? We got to recon this thing overnight? We got the bicycles. Just going to point out we have bicycles.
All right.
Salvation, 20 miles. Bicyclists welcomed.
Bicyclists welcome.
Okay, so do you think that the best way to do it is to send one of us... And just to scout out what it is,
Yeah, but which one?
All right. Okay. On the count of three. One, two, three. Not it, Samantha. Oh, man. It looks like you got to go check it out. Oh, that's so crazy. Well, anyway, you got to pay your dues. And I push her right out of the van. And I said, we're just going to wait here. If you're not back by midnight, we're just going to keep going.
So I roll down the window and I poke my head out. And I'm like, I'm sorry. It's just that, you know, we've been podcasting a long time. We sort of had this bond. We're sort of like, whatever he says, like, you know, we're just on the same team here. I'm sure, listen, you could be on the team too. If you pull this off, though, I'm sure.
So the deal is she has to go. Well, no, Brian, you're going to have to be a couple. You're going to have to pretend that you're a couple. And you're going to have to go and scout it out and say that you're just by
right,
yourself.
Well, hold on. Let me make sure. Samantha, does she understand what's happening? Like, how is she broken with grief or does she get...
She's getting her wits about her, more so than you guys are.
Okay, all right, let me have a private word with Samantha. Hey, Samantha, listen. I know Justin came on a little
bit. Why do you have the sunglasses on?
Okay, all right, I'll take it off the sunglasses.
Why are you still wearing the cop uniform?
I take off the sunglasses, but I do that thing where you wear them backwards on your head behind you. And
how
I
are you
pop
holding
my
your,
collar.
Your nightstick in a somewhat suggestive, but then again, weird way.
Samantha, listen. I know it comes on a little bit strong, but I think Justin's on to something. I think that, you know, if I were to go in by myself, I think they'd just jump me as some random transient. But if the two of us went in as a couple... And we're gonna have to sell this couple thing, girl. If we sold it as a couple of couples, like we could even pretend we didn't even know there was an apocalypse. We could talk about our crazy cross country ride. Are you in for that?
Yeah, it's like we could watch Stranger Things, you know. yeah. I mean, she's still a little shell shocked. She's you know, whatever you want.
Okay,
but
you do know how to ride a bike, right? That's something.
Yeah, and she just looks wistfully out the back window towards where you buried her
right,
child.
It's fine.
You know?
All right, come on, girl.
Oh, go right back to that. It's always that with you, Samantha. Oh, my child that I buried.
So you're 20 miles away from where the science is salvation. What's your plan? Are you going to get on your bikes right now? And
yeah. Yeah. 20 miles away. Oh,
we're going to drive like 5 miles out.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna take the bikes.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so you're leaving Justin behind with the van.
Yeah, and
going ahead. You bringing a walkie-talkie or anything? Did you think about that, or are you already pedaling
away? The deal is that you guys are gonna go, and you're gonna play the role as just refugee transients.
That's right. Right?
See how they handle it. And then one of you is going to sneak out after nightfall to give me the word that it's safe.
That's
for
right.
Me to come
now,
in
now we have walkie talkies. I also brought flare guns. We both have flare guns and a few flares. So the signal is one flare. Everything's great. Come on in. Two flares is run. Leave us behind. Three flares is please come rescue us. Four flares is. I farted.
This is so many flares. Why is rescue us the third one?
Can you write that down?
The mob is attacking him. He's loading the flare. Hold on. I got to get to three because that's when I tell him I need help. One, he's going to think I'm okay, guys.
But come on. How hilarious would it be? You know, Justin sees three flares. He's like, oh, my God, I got to rescue him. And then that fourth flare goes up and he's like, oh, that brushwood. Even afar, he's pulling my leg.
Well, then you got to assume that he's looking for flares, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many flares is it if Samantha's pulling your third leg?
And listen, Justin's my buddy, Brian. I'm not going to disparage my friend in front of public and everybody else like this. But have you ever seen how observant Mr. Magoo is?
look, man.
You get easily distracted.
You don't go to war with the eyesight you wish you had. You go to war with the eyesight you have.
I'm just saying any plan that counts on Justin noticing a tiny little glow in the distance within a span of 16 seconds.
It's a backup,
seconds.
Man. I got these walkie-talkies. Hey, okay. What's up, Justin? It's Brian. Over.
Yes.
Yeah.
A better plan. Much, much better plan.
You think that'd be the
tell
first
Justin,
plan.
We get a podcast every 20 minutes.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's...
that he will show up for, man. He will be on it.
All right. So at this point... Samantha and I start pedaling out into, I'd like to think it's nighttime, so we're able to start approaching like from the sides. Like, well, we go north And then West.
Hey, what's your cover story? What's your name for them as you're a couple? What's your cover story?
Bryantha and Cyan.
Uh-huh. And where are you from? Where'd you come from?
Trosten.
And do you have an accent?
No.
I want to listen. Far be it for me to interrupt two of the greatest criminologists to ever, you know, address these sort of things and strategists. Normally, when you go undercover, you're trying to protect some sort of ID or identity.
Yeah.
What is your reason for going undercover, Brian?
Justin just seemed to think it was a good idea, so I'm just going along with it. I mean,
how would knowing who you are and where you're from be used against you, Brian?
That's really a question for Justin. I mean, I just like to play dress up. Should I take off this mustache? Because I had the spirit gum and everything. I already put it on.
We don't know anything about these people. We don't know. Listen, Andrew, there's no knowns. There's known unknowns and there's unknown unknowns.
What's the best way to enter what could be what you accept as a potentially hostile situation with a flimsy disguise in the intent to deceive, transparent upon your face?
You don't think Bryantha and Cyan of Trosten with that thick Trosten accent is gonna play well?
Who knows?
Well,
I know, but who knows? So you decide to embark at nightfall on bicycle, am I correct?
Yep.
Okay. So you're pedaling along, Brian. You're pedaling along, and you notice that who's your accomplice again? Let's call her Samantha. It simple.
Bryantha.
You notice she's slow, but she's keeping pace, you know. She's keeping along, and she keeps kind of looking off to the side. You know, you're deadhead, you know, you're facing straight ahead and you still got the little baseball card in your spokes going da, 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 da. You're like, listen, if I go really fast, it sounds like a Harley. You know, she's looking at something because it's nightfall, so you can't really see anything. And then you stop and you look and you turn a flashlight to go look at what she's looking at.
Oh, what you looking at there?
Yeah, for our audio listeners, a random Bryantha mustache just appeared on Brian's face.
Bryantha, what are you looking at? Oi.
Yeah. See, he's got this big handlebar mustache, which implies the bicycle he should be pedaling to be one of those big giant front wheel
bikes. A penny farthing,
bikes,
right? Yeah.
So you look up and you see a cross.
Ah, hey, Bryantha, there's a cross over there.
All right, and there's a sign on the cross. It says, Salvation, you know, 2 miles away.
Ah, Salvation's 2 miles away, love.
And another sign that says, you know, sinners stay out.
Hey, you ain't sinned lately, have you? No.
Around the neck of the body nailed to the cross.
What say we do a Yui? Let's just head on back to the battle wagon.
So what's your plan there?
Meanwhile, smash cut to Justin in the battle wagon in his underwear like Risky Business.
He's playing PlayStation 3 games on the old console built in.
Na.
Well, we're going to find out next week what happens next on this, okay? So.
Oi! That sounds reasonable.
I would like to, before we jump into picks, I would like to find out more about Brian's little trip to DEF CON.
Oh, dude, it was a blast. I unfortunately didn't see nearly as much of DEF CON as I would have liked. There were some exciting tales that we're going to share on tonight's Night Attack, as I'm sure Justin has about Gen Con as well. But one of the stories that came out of DEF CON was that some folks presented a whole thing on their attempts to jam and block some of the features of Tesla's auto drive or autopilot to cause it to run into things that it doesn't normally run into, which I thought was really, really interesting. Not in this, I mean, yes, in this particular instance, you know, they took their findings and they immediately reported them to Tesla. Everything was above board. But it does open up that fascinating question of, you know, does this become the number one most tantalizing target for terrorism? Is, you know, just as there's something about airplanes that for 40 years has attracted extremists.
Well, Brian, let me run through, because I'm ignorant here. So when you say that they're, I mean, are they literally putting an object or something on the back of a pickup truck or whatever to, they're putting some object or something out there to defeat this, right? Is that the question?
Yeah, well, there's jamming attacks where they shine lasers into the sensors to blind them and cause them to not recognize objects that are there in front of them. They also figured out that they could wrap certain objects in certain materials and make them invisible to you know, the autopilot.
They could drop cinder blocks from overpasses onto the car.
Well, I mean, if your point is there's nothing new about, you know, messing with vehicles, of course, that's the case. But I'm far less concerned with the mechanics and more concerned with the attractiveness as a target for people who want to cause mischief in a way that they know will instantly create international headlines.
So I think, well, just also for people who are not aware, DEF CON is the place where these kind of findings are talked about. This is like the biggest conference where people who are hacking, you know, hacking systems, or otherwise, will, you know, they do this research and they show it to people because that's where this is, you know, that's where this kind of stuff is discussed and showed off. So. It's very interesting, but this is not necessarily shocking that this kind of research would be discussed or this kind of vulnerability would be gone over at DEF CON. You know, if anything, any kind of new technology is sort of shown off at this level with this kind of detail at that conference. What is interesting is, you know, hey, what are the vulnerabilities and how easy are they to do? Like, for example, when Apple and all subsequently, you know, all the other, you know, phones started doing fingerprint technology. Immediately you saw, oh, look, hackers have hacked the fingerprint technology. And it's like, yeah, if you get somebody's thumb and then create a perfect a replica of it and then, you know, have it heated enough or pressed down enough for it to recognize, then yes, you can do it. But is it something that is replicatable by people who want to do, you know, who want to do something nefarious with it, or is it easier than a car skimmer? And in this case, you know, there's been plenty of remote exploits on automobiles, self-driving or otherwise. You know, beyond the technical level of finding out, like, oh wow, this is possible. The question is then, I think, to Brian's point, is it easy enough that malicious, let's say anywhere from pranksters to terrorists would want to exploit that? And does it hit that level of, like, you know, is it easy enough to do it? Like, I guess, is it easier than just, you know, cutting somebody's brakes or something?
No, I think it's going to be interesting because, you know, we're using these complex vision systems and these automated systems as we do want to understand all the different ways in which they can be spoofed and foiled. And, you know, we saw with, you know, the collision of, you know, the Tesla, the high-speed collision where the tractor trailer truck drove across the road and what may appear to be, you know, a blind spot in which would be anybody's sort of ability to do that is like, what are these cases? What are these things? You know, can somebody put some laser pointers strategically on the side of the road and cause disruption? So it's absolutely interesting to see what these things are going to be because it's always like it's security research. It's a moving target. It's a constantly moving target. And, you know, trying to find out, like, and you know, yeah, you want to make sure that they aren't super simple, dirt, dumb, easy vulnerabilities there because that's going to be, you know, scary. The, you know, the cool thing about, like, you know, the thing that, like, Tesla has going for them that Apple has going for them is that they can push out updates really, really quickly to stuff. And that's been one of the frustrating things in, you know, the Android system where Android has been this amazingly huge success story. It's on over a billion devices, probably most successful software platform ever. And you look at how quickly it came about and the ability to contribute and, you know, do that. But because of the distributed carrier network and the individual providers, it's harder to push security things out there, which makes these exploits scary, you know. And as we move forward into a much more complex future, you know, when we find are these really simple exploits, how quickly can we fix them? And if they're fundamental flaws in the system that just can't be fixed from a software solution, that's going to be scary.
Well, and that's one of those things where, in that regard, DEF CON is kind of a wonderful construct because on the one hand, it's, you know, it's where a lot of people go to learn how to be very effective at penetrating people's systems. And there's no determination on whether this knowledge would be used for good or for evil. But in the case of the people who gave this presentation, I, for one, think it's a great service that you have people thinking like a criminal, thinking like a bad guy, trying to figure out what kind of mischief they can do, but they are doing it for the end goal of the glory and credit that comes with getting on stage and telling all your fellow hackers about these exploits that are available. And in doing so, sort of, you know, also notifying the powers that be so that they can fix stuff.
Yeah, their goal is to make these things better. Their goal is to make these things safer, and they would rather, you know, they would rather it be like, hey, let's notify people that there are these vulnerabilities, and let's solve these problems together, and that's part of the purpose of it. So yeah, I think it's fascinating. It's going to be, yeah, we're going to see these inevitable stories, and oh my God, and some of it's going to be hyperbole, some of it's going to be real issues and stuff, so, you know.
And what's fascinating about so much of that is what conferences like DEF CON have kind of continued to bring to light is that as everything becomes more interconnected and internet available and technologically specific, you see the standardization of bug bounties and hack bounties and stuff like that, and the rules of engagement of, hey, if a hacker reports a vulnerability to you, you have as a company X amount of time to respond to it and fix it. And if it's still there, then, you know, a lot of these security firms will announce them publicly to, you know, make sure that people, that the consumers at large know about that. These are a lot of sticky issues and compensation on top of it that are made better when this information is kind of out there. And that hackers, specifically white hat hackers who are there, you know, to collect money from companies for fixing vulnerabilities for them, can be looked at for what they are, which is a tremendous boon to the world at large, so the exploits don't become malicious.
Well, gentlemen, speaking of malicious, it's time for our picks.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's malicious is my envy for you reading it first, because my pick is your pick from just a couple of weeks ago. I just finished Scott Adams's book, How to Fail at Everything and Still Win Big. It was fantastic. I heard stuff in this book that I've thought quietly for years and never heard anyone ever say before. And it's like the way he thinks about it is so scientific and so fair and so even-handed that it almost makes it clumsy at times to read the book, because he does a good job of saying, hey, when I say this, I know you're going to think I mean that, but I don't mean that. What I mean is it appears it has the same effect as though blank and blank, 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 blank. But his relentlessly scientific approach to hacking his own body and his own attitudes is wonderful. I absolutely loved this book. It was amazing.
I'm still reading it, but I very much have enjoyed everything that I've listened to thus far, and I think that there's a lot of stuff that we've talked about on this podcast and in other venues about what the value of failure, and how much subjugating your ego about stuff can really, really, really bring a lot of benefit. And the faster you understand the lessons and don't focus on kind of the psychic wounds, the better your life's going to be.
Yeah, I loved the book, enjoyed it. I mean, some of the stuff, the diet stuff, it was like, all right, I'm bored here, but a lot of it was so great. And also, you know, you run into this area where sometimes when we're people who love science and skepticism and stuff, and we're trying to articulate things that we don't talk about as much, like luck or determination or fate or things like that, where we can see these things from very practical, empirical sort of worldviews, but our language just gets to be so fuzzy in that area and how easy it can be misconstrued. And he went through that, you know, with his talking about his, you know, affirmations and stuff. And,
sure.
And I remember skeptics reacting to this very negatively without like really parsing what he was trying to say, because it's like, oh, here's another one saying this stuff.
You know? Well, I loved his metaphor of talking about his dog. His dog comes up and stares at him intently when it wants a treat. And he knows this is the dog trying to get a treat. That's why it's staring intently at me. But then he thought about it from the dog's perspective. And he says, the dog doesn't know that I'm autonomous. It doesn't know that I am the one deciding whether or not to give it a treat. As far as the dog is concerned, maybe the dog thinks that it's doing a mind trick and all it has to do is show up, stare intently and think, treat, treat, treat. And he's causing me to get him a treat. And the thing is, the dog's right as far as the dog is concerned. Like, it's wrong. It's right for all the wrong reasons. But ultimately, the dog knows if he wants to summon the treat beast, he goes and stares intently and thinks treat until a treat appears.
You know, it was funny when I listened to that part, though. I was thinking, like, yeah, but kind of like, but there are two systems there that sort of like, you know, the dog, what the dog doesn't know, but what the dog can rely upon is, you know, 10,000 years of evolution for you to feel guilty as hell if you don't give the dog what he wants. And you can claim you're autonomous, but there's a reason why we spend large amounts of money and resources, you know, housing these animals that serve no function. That is, you know, no objective function other than making us feel good.
Yeah. So. Regardless, like, you know, from a practical, a lot of his advice is like, man, you know, yes, it very likely doesn't work this way. However, thinking of it this way is a very simple heuristic to get you these results for me, you know.
Absolutely. I look at it where the thing you focus on is the thing you're going to direct your energy towards. And you're going to see these opportunities if you're focused on that stuff. And if you're in that mindset, that's what's going to happen. And it's we could have a whole long discussion on that, which may be what After Things is all about. My pick is I'm going to reiterate before, like, I've been finding some more great, like, hey, you can get this book really cheap if you go to Amazon and get the free Kindle version first and then pay $3. Like, I just did that with Journey to the Center of the Earth. The Tim Curry Audible version was like $3 if you go through Amazon instead of using a credit on Audible.
Right.
But my current pick is, this is a series based on one of my favorite writers, who one of the people that actually made me want to become a writer, which is Bernard Cornwell. And his Sharp series I loved. And now there's a series that I think it's on, I forget which network is it. Is it Stars? But anyway, The Last Kingdom. Are you guys familiar with this?
No.
So this is on Netflix. And The Last Kingdom is basically about the survival of when, was it Wessex, was the last kingdom in England that wasn't being dominated by the Danes. And it takes, Bernard Cornwell likes to take true events and then create a character and put him in the middle of these events around great people. And Sharp, he put a guy, a regular grunt soldier, in the middle of the Napoleonic Wars. And here we're getting a guy who was a Saxon who was raised by Danes and then went to go work for the Saxons, who is trying to kind of find his own way through there. But BBC America TV series, that's what it is. So based on the series by Bernard Cornwell, and it's a great, 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 I kind of like the Vikings, but the Vikings was so soap opera-ish, you know, and it was so kind of a formula. Now we're going to cut away to the villain. We're going to cut away here. Where what Cornwell does really well is he'll show you two sides of something, two different sides of it, and there are going to be good people in each side and there are going to be bad people in each side. And picking your allegiances as a viewer is not going to be very, very easy. So that is my pick. Bernard Cornwell's historical fiction is fantastic, and this is a great introduction. He did a bunch of Sharp's books were made into TV movies, and now this is a series that I think is getting renewed for another season in 2017. So it's on Netflix, so you can watch it for free if you have a Netflix subscription.
Sweet. My pick, because I was at Gen Con all weekend, is a card game called Dead Last. I really liked it. It is super simple. It is a game where you shoot your friends, and then the final two people have a prisoner's dilemma situation. But especially as I have run through our, you know, the whole contender process, I've really come to appreciate, especially games that are, you know, very small decks but are very, very fun. So go ahead and check it out. Dead Last.
Excellent. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this podcast.